This every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now it's True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here is David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, it is that time of the week. Your favorite Tuesday you've had the entire week, and we are stoked to bring you the True Wealth Radio Show. I am your host, Dave Littlejohn. Joining me in studio today,
Matt Dixon.
Matt, you are prepared today. This is exciting.
Yeah, well, you know, I was like, what if David's running late or gets caught behind a train today? So I felt like I had to come with something. I was like, I've been here before. I've been in the hot seat, so I'm not going to get caught.
No, I'm stoked that you did. Reminder to everybody, we are live streaming, so you can grab us on Facebook or YouTube if you want to see these mugs. I think my face is clearly for radio.
I feel like we keep getting better at it, too. Like, from where we started.
Almost on time this time, and we're figuring it out. So
yeah.
Sure. You've set up nicely, by the way.
Thank you.
I have to give you mad props for that. I was playing a taxi driver to my kiddos to get into some things before getting to here. After I calculated this out, I've been in 5.5 hours worth of meetings so far, not counting a breakfast. It was just a buddy breakfast. So that doesn't count as a meeting, but it was an hour breakfast and then 5.5 hours of FaceTime on point. Now the radio show.
Do you feel like, though, that the radio show is you almost coming up for air?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Now, this is probably some of my favorite time. Is I love sharing with our listeners, and then, you know, we're building content. The trick, of course, is to make it quality and relevant and useful for everybody that's listening.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is fun for me. It's almost like a break. I leave here and I'm always like, woohoo, you know, if I was tired, I will leave feeling more awake after the show.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So yeah.
So my thought for the radio show today, kind of where my mind's at with all of this, is we talked a little bit last week about, are we at the bottom? And we kind of theorized, you know, where are we at with this market? I mean, and you kind of argued both sides of the coin for us.
Right.
And so I wanted to look at it a little bit more in depth today and say, okay, you know, where are we at in the economic cycle and what evidence is pointing to where we're at currently?
Okay.
Yeah.
And I did this today in investment committee. I also pulled up a couple of tools that are sort of fun and useful for looking at ways to value where the market maybe should be.
Yeah, and so, that was actually a really cool chart. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
I can, because it's super simple. And this is something that any of you listening could do this even with a simple spreadsheet or just a calculator if you were willing to kind of write a few answers down. What I was doing was showing how price to earnings ratios have changed over time and how treasury yields have changed over time. And what really brought this out is I was reading a Reddit post. I mean, this is kind of funny, right?
Okay.
Reddit is where you get, you have to be careful if you're going to wade into that pool because you're going to get a little bit of everything. And if you're looking for politically correct, you are in the wrong place.
Yeah.
Right? But there are some really sharp minds, and somebody was pointing out that, hey, you know what? If we go through an economic contraction of 15%, and what they were suggesting is if we were expecting
you mean from where we're at currently or from our prior highs?
So let's just from where we're at, let's say we go 15% contraction of earnings. And the suggestion is that the S&P 500 has these projected earnings. So let's keep the math pretty easy. Okay, if we were talking about the S&P, if you looked at all the stocks of the S&P 500 and you looked at how much earnings per share they had and you added them all up. So all the companies, you know, it's like this company's $100 and it makes a dollar of earnings for the 100. So it's $1 of earnings per $100 share price, right? And so you add up all the share prices and all of the earnings, then you would come up with a total earnings number. Right. And so the earnings number, let's say it was $250 per unit of the S&P 500 per aggregated shares altogether. Right. So if there's $250 of earnings and you were to apply a multiple to it, meaning like how many times, how like 250 times what would give you a value? And if we looked at the current PE ratio of somewhere around 20, right? So you paid 20 times earnings, then the value of the stock market should be 5,000. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If earnings were $250 a share. If earnings were $200 per share and it was a 20 PE ratio, the market should be at 4,000. Okay? Follow me? And so what I'm doing is just multiplying the earnings per share times 20. That 20 figure is what we would call the multiple. This is also what you would call the PE ratio. The price to earnings ratio is the multiple. So how many times earnings must you pay to get the value of the stock or a value of a company, for example? So if we start with the premise that, and this was the base premise, right? I think it was you were going to have like a 14 multiple on the S&P, mm-hmm. which is pretty low. And then you're going to have earnings in the neighborhood of about $225 a share. And if you think about, so if we had originally projected $250 of earnings, mm-hmm. but we think that it's going to be a 15% market decline, like economic contraction.
Right.
So the economy shrinks by 15%, or earnings at least shrink by 15%. Because believe it or not, the economy could shrink maybe 5%, but earnings could shrink more.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's because earnings are just the margin in the business, right? That's the profit. So if the profit is everything above fixed cost, if you have the economy contract by a few percentage points, that may be all of the earnings for a company.
Right.
Right. Doesn't mean they're profitless, but they could be break even now.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have like, oh, 15% decline in profit means 15% decline in the economy. No, they're not directly linked. So let's just play the math game, Matt. You, former math teacher, right?
Oh, boy.
You play this game. So if we had originally expected $250 of earnings and we have a 15% reduction in earnings.
Okay.
Okay.
So 10% would have been 20.
Well, 25, off of that, right? Yeah. On 250. Yeah. So I just look at this and simply go, so we have $200 blocks and a $50 block. So it's $15 mm-hmm. per $100 block. So that's $30. And then another $7.50 for the other half, right? So that would be $37.50 from $250. So that's going to leave us with what? $222.50?
That's pretty close. Yes. Yeah.
So at $222.50 and a 14 multiple, the S&P 500 would fall from where it is today around $38.50.
Mm-hmm.
Down to 31.15.
And we saw some pretty extreme projections in that range, like on the super extreme.
The super extremes, like there's some companies that have said, well, this could happen. Mm-hmm. That's like another 20% from here.
Right. What are the odds of that? It seems like the odds would be pretty low.
Well, it all depends. If you're trying to look into history
right. And
say, well, look at previous declines, it mm-hmm. could be this. And so if you're really pessimistic, then you would say, well, of course it's going to go down that far. If you're really optimistic, you can say, well, that's ridiculous. But let's pretend
we're just kind of neutral and looking at the...
I'm going to just make this bold statement here.
Okay.
I think a 14 multiple is really low.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When a year and a half ago, we traded at almost a 40 multiple. Okay? When they were printing money. And the reason is because there's this relationship between yield on a treasury, like, so if you could get a guaranteed return,
mm-hmm.
okay, there's a relationship between that risk-free rate of return and the risked rate of return. And you can look throughout history, and what you find is when interest rates are pretty low, multiples tend to be higher.
Mm-hmm.
When interest rates get really high, multiples go down because it's not worth taking the risk in stocks.
Right.
So when we saw back in like the 70s or something, you know, when you saw interest rates at 18%, you saw multiples of like 7. Okay, we're seeing interest rates at 10-year treasury yields, 3.5%.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't make a ton of sense to me that we can say, well, let's take from about a 20 to 21 multiple maybe and drop it by 35%.
Right.
Right. That's just such an aggressive multiple adjustment. So I think that maybe we see, let's say we saw a 17 multiple on a 15% reduction in earnings. That's a value of 37.82.
Which we've been kind of hovering in that range, right? Yeah.
if we had a 20 multiple, we should on that projection of earnings, we should be at 44.50.
Wow, which would be a pretty big recovery.
That'd be
from
a
here.
Recovery right yeah. now of over 600, well, about 600 points,
right,
on the S&P. Mm-hmm. So 600 points in today's value, you know, you're talking about what? That's more than that's about a 18% recovery,
right?
And this is just in the debate over multiples.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we should understand this relationship of numbers and how we value the markets, and then talk about all these economic things at play here. Because for our listeners, how do you figure out, well, which multiple makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So let's start with the backdrop of what we know about the market, which is its price. The stock market, the S&P 500 is about 3850. We know that it's off of its peak that was close to 40. It was like 4,800 and something.
Yeah.
Right? So it went from 48 something down to over 1,000 point drop.
Mm-hmm.
So year to date, it's down somewhere around 18.5% year to date. And off right. of its peak, about 20 or a little more.
Mm-hmm.
So a bear market, full-blown 20% correction. Some people call that a crash. I think that's inflammatory language. But, right, because, you know, that just yeah. panics people. It's a crash. Oh, my gosh. Like, it's down. That sucks. But
right.
let's not try to panic people with our language here. So if we know that as our backdrop, this is where we've come from already. This is the historical norms. Then we think about, just how much farther do you think the Fed's going to raise rates, and what does that mean for the economy? That, to me, sets the table for everything that you've prepared.
I like it. But before we get to that, I think yeah, it's
probably... You're going to do it, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to okay. say it's probably time for one of those obscene profit
right.
breaks.
All right, so we'll take a scene profit break. All right, there's the music. So we'll do that. Stick around, and we'll be right back, and we'll get into this more. But first, these important messages... This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to True Wealth, a News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. If you are just tuning in, you can grab the podcast later by going to littlejohnfs.com. It'll be posted there, your favorite podcasting places. You can look them up. We're also live streaming online, and credit to my good man, Matt, who we had one of our cameras go down, and he has gotten it back up and live. So well played, sir. And you can see that today was... almost Aloha shirt day. We're in the 90s, so we're not scared. And I should say 90s in temperature, right? Not like 90s. Well, duh, you guys get it. We're recording now. So, Matt, when we were setting the table here, we talked about multiples and how the market gets valued and so forth. And you really, you know, you've been kind of following this, the economic cycle,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Also, as I recall... Right, you know, you were one of the more pessimistic about where this market was headed early mm-hmm. on. When we started to go into this, you seemed to, and I think correctly later identified, this thing's getting messy in a hurry.
Right.
And you figured it was going down. I think your ultimate call may have been more extreme than we're at currently.
Yeah.
But so I feel like you've done a lot of study here. What are your thoughts on where we're at in the cycle?
Well, I've noticed that, you know, I mean, we hit that 3,600 mark, which was something I had an eye on, and we got away from it pretty quick. We started to recover and move higher from there.
And you just mean, like, we got below 3,700 on the S&P 500.
Yeah,
I think we went into, like, 3,650.
We were there for, like, a brief moment and then
like
ran out of it. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the buyers in the marketplace saw that as a buying opportunity, mm-hmm. and we've kind of held that ground for a couple, what, is it been 2 weeks now that we've held that for?
Close to a month. I feel like it was like June 16th or 17th where we really troughed out.
Has it been that long? Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's July 12th yeah, now.
So I guess
it's been
so.
Almost
yeah.
a month.
So it's yeah. been a while, and we've kind of been hovering in this range, uh-huh. and the market knows that we have more interest rate hikes coming, yet we've kind of just hung around. And what's been interesting is we've seen oil kind of taper off, and we've seen tech kind of get some footing. And so it seems like things are kind of starting to normalize a little bit in the marketplace.
You know what the good sign to me is?
Well, I don't know if this is what
you're
thinking.
There's still so many pessimists out there. I actually right. think that's a good sign when people are telling me why they believe it's just going to get so much worse from here.
Well, the volatility index, too, has mm-hmm. started to kind of normalize. We aren't seeing those huge 10% swings in between days, right?
Like, right. Well, the volatility index itself, remember, the VIX is, that's what it's called. So if you look mm-hmm. up VIX, that's the volatility index. The numbers associated with that have sort of drifted lower. The higher mm-hmm. the number, the more volatile.
Right.
It's a measure of option pricing. So when option pricing spikes up, that means that people are there's more implied volatility. There's more assumption that there's going to be volatility in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it has to be priced in as such. So to see a scenario where that VIX is declining would suggest that the markets are getting a little bit more at ease with what the future looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that could, of course, change at any moment, too. But
yeah.
it's interesting to see that it's largely become more sanguine. Is that the right term for it? Just more
sure.
chill. You know, the mm-hmm. VIX is chilling out.
Yeah. So it's I think we're starting to kind of see a shift in sentiment almost mm-hmm. in the marketplace.
Probably
so.
The a lot more important than people realize. I think sentiment's a big deal. We don't talk about it a ton on the show, but the reality is somebody's willingness to buy or sell, that eagerness level to participate in mm-hmm. the markets one way or the other, I think has a material. I mean, that is like the big thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who cares what caused the sentiment? The sentiment is what causes the behavior.
Right. And I look at this like, you know, there's a lot of really big time investors that come into this saying, we know we can't time the bottom. We know that it's 20% off. Do we want to miss catching that upswing, or do we want to start participating in the markets? Because if you get people rushing to participate, that's going to drive the price higher too.
Sure. Yeah. I kind of, when I look at the backdrop, that's a tougher sell for me personally mm-hmm. to think that everybody that just got burned really bad is going to all of a sudden find free cash and become big buyers in this market.
Right.
Right. Especially because a lot of it was driven on the retail side in the last year or two with, you know, the mm-hmm. stimulus money and so forth. Fun question for you, Matt.
Yeah.
Because we are arguably generationally divided, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm really in the Gen X. You're, and this is not an insult when I say this, but, you know, you fall demographically in the millennial generation.
Unfortunately, I hate to identify with that group, but I have to.
It's
yeah.
okay.
Yeah.
It's okay, right? Look, I mean, the whole thing about trying to label people, therein mm-hmm. lies a big problem culturally right now.
Yeah.
We're so busy trying to throw people into groups mm-hmm. to identify them. And I'm like you can give 35 million people
the same
behavioral traits.
Right.
You're like, well, you know, there's kind of a bell curve and the majority of people fall in mm-hmm. this trend. I go, you can say that about like humans. Right. You know, for the most part, we're awake during daylight. Some people are nocturnal and some people work nights. But like for the most part, we're solar powered. OK,
mm-hmm.
big rocket science there.
But I mean, there's some stereotypical truth to it, too. Like this, the millennial generation really hasn't seen the hardship that prior generations had to go through.
Right. Right? Well, like, or even, you know, I always talk about the Gen X group is this. What we call a digital immigrant, like grew up without, like the technology wasn't there at first, but we got it at such an early age that mm-hmm. everybody adopted it like natives, right? So it's like throwing a kid into another culture. Yeah, maybe they weren't born with that language, but they're young enough that they assimilate it and they don't have an accent and everything works.
Yep.
And you're like, well, they kind of got the old world and the new world. Well, I think that's the Gen X, which gives a little of the cynicism, too, about mm-hmm. like, yeah, I know my parents rode uphill both ways in the snow, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of joke about like, and so did I. Like, whatever. But I wonder about the changing of the guard in terms of who's driving this market.
Really?
A little bit. If you think
about, I mean, I know that the Robin Hood kind of movement really did change the marketplace a little bit for a while.
But how many people are under 40 now that if you think about the median age of advisors, the advisors aren't the ones on Wall Street, right? Wall Street's kind of a high pressure deal. How many Wall Street floor trader types that are, you know, seasoned vets that are in their, you know, mid to late 50s and older are still there versus you've got this younger group that's coming in and starting to shift behaviors?
Yeah, I mean, that's something to think about.
Is that a thing? It's an anecdotal question.
I think we need to take a trip to New York to really find out.
Did it. And when I was there, the markets went up.
I know. You brought all the luck to New York.
Everything was working. I was at Wall Street. I was like, guys, I'll do it myself if you won't.
And you did.
And it was working. And then I leave and they're like, oh, thank God Little John left. Let's just drive this thing back down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's really what happened, by the way.
If it ever gets really bad again, we're buying you a plane ticket and sending you.
I don't want to be there. I really now.
You appreciate grass now?
I appreciate the space. I totally get what it means to be in a high-density environment now. I will tell you that you are just bombarded by marketing of all types, whether you want to call that propaganda or advertising or media or whatever.
How about a combination of both?
It is all of it. You are. There's just nowhere you can look where there's not an advertising message. It's on every building. It's in every, you know, taxi. It's in every like subway car. And there, it's just everywhere. It's literally on light posts. There are banners hanging from light posts with advertising on them. It's everywhere. So you cannot escape. So it changed my perspective of like, I really get now why population centers think so different than rural areas.
They're just being fed the same message on repeat 24/7.
It's not just that. I mean, like, if you live in a super concentrated area, you actually wonder, like, where am I going to get clean water from?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we're like, how's the trash going to get taken away? Like, those are real things. Like, New York's trash is remarkable. They literally pile bags full on the street and then they come and collect it. And the smells and everything, that's all part of the experience, evidently.
Hmm.
I mean, we look around and we're like, well, no, you have a trash can that you put it all in and then you take it to the street and it's lovely and it goes away. Like, or you can, you know, take it to the dump later. Like, can you imagine somebody in New York that doesn't even own a car? Like,
they probably don't even think about where it goes. It just magically disappears in the middle of the night.
The urban and rural divide, it makes so much more sense why that divide continues to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And you just see the people, it takes so much time and effort to get places that their circle kind of gets to the area that they operate in. Where here you could, like, 3 hours, you know, 3 hours is like getting across Manhattan or something on a train, or going from, it took an hour and a half to go 20 miles to the airport from in Manhattan during rush hour.
It'll be interesting.
An hour and a half to go 20 miles. In an hour and a half, I can be almost to Salem.
Right.
So
it'll actually be interesting to see kind of how that population density changes over time, because for a really long time, people just kept, you know, migrating to these big cities, and the big cities kept getting bigger. And then COVID happened and people were able to work from home, and they started looking and saying, hey, well, I can buy a house in a more rural area for half the price of what I'm paying now. And so we've actually seen kind of the opposite effect happen.
Well, we've seen both. Right? We've seen people that are in COVID, people wanted the space, so they left. But then you see people that are like, no, you know what? I'm a city person. I just need to be in where the action is.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to get back to that higher density. And so I think at different points in your life, you may feel different about it. Like, being young in Manhattan is probably cooler than being old in Manhattan, because it's harder to get around everywhere.
You know? Right.
So it just takes more physical effort.
Yeah.
And why, I guess it started with that whole digression of, is there this changing of the guard on Wall Street that's starting to change the way things behave? I don't know. Or do you ever change the guard, or do we just pass the baton to the next person? It's kind of the cookie cutter of the last person.
I don't know. My gut feeling is you kind of pass the baton, and that, going back to our original commentary, like, that there is a ton of institutional money that's driving this thing versus the per, you know, the retail investor that's kind of doing it on their own.
Yeah. Well, there's always been mostly institutional money that drives the market.
Right.
That's true. Cause I mean, that's the really big box. I also think that's what anchors the market, right? What, mm-hmm. what keeps the market from completely
imploding on itself. Yeah.
Is the institutional money. But
yeah. Can you imagine what the stock market would look like if there was no institutional money and everyone just managed all of their own money?
It's like the difference between being on an aircraft carrier and a canoe, right? Like in a canoe, you like one person leans too far to the side and everybody falls out. Right?
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
So like we want that stability here, folks. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't turn an aircraft carrier very fast. That is true,
mm-hmm.
right? So that, but that's also maybe the good thing. So I don't know. Anyway, look, we're running long on a segment here. I think we probably have to take another obscene profit break.
But when we get back.
When we get back, I'm going to let Matt talk all about the economy.
Oh, boy.
So stick around. Go. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, everybody. We are back from the break. You're listening to the True Wealth Show, and we've got David in studio and myself, Matt Dixon. And so, David, where did we leave off?
Well, we've talked about all kinds of goofiness today, right?
Yeah.
We talked about some of the ways that people may value the market.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, and I talked about specifically P.E. ratios and how that can affect or how you can use that to sort of divine a value for stocks or the S&P 500. Right. So it's just a multiple of the aggregate earnings of all the companies in the S&P 500. We talked a little bit about things that drive the economy. And, you know, my question was, do you think that there's any sort of changing of the guard generationally mm-hmm. where what we're seeing in the marketplace is starting to change? And then we also talked a little bit about the VIX and how volatility, we've been tracking, and it looks like volatility is coming out of this market. That's a good sign if volatility is coming out of the market.
Mm-hmm.
But, where do we go from here?
Well, one of the things that's been on my mind is everyone has been talking about, are we headed into a recession, right?
Yes.
And
did I say that out loud?
Right. And so
we're probably already in it, by the way.
Right. And so some of the stuff that I was looking at earlier today, it was 10 major indicators of what you can expect if you're headed into a depression or a recession, either one. And one of those was a slump in the stock market, right?
So for depression,
they're different.
Recession.
And this was labeled as a depression, but I don't know that we're going to head into a depression just
How
because historically.
Did they define it for you?
They didn't. Okay, I mean,
so usually this is what I understand the definition to be. Two quarters is formal recession.
And right? we've like, had like, two quarters.
Well, we've had one quarter, but we had GDP continuing to go up, so we're concerned, or CPI continuing to go up. So we're looking for two quarters of back-to-back decline in GDP
mm-hmm.
would be considered a recession, right? One is an anomaly, two in a row is a recession. More than six, and we call it a depression. So six quarters,
mm-hmm.
right? So two, six, we're in a...
Well, we've had about 6 months of consecutive downturn.
Quarters, not months. Right?
Yeah.
So you got the 3 months, one quarter. So we've had 6 months, but that's not market downturn.
Right.
Stock market's unrelated to recession, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because like a bear market, that's not it. It's GDP decline,
mm-hmm.
right? So when you see gross domestic product shrink. Okay? And that's bad news because usually tax receipts shrink, unemployment grows, and then you have deflationary pressures, which if... Those are, inflation has its own problem set. Deflation has a different problem set.
Mm-hmm.
Both need to be combated. What we want is price stability. And that's usually historically defined as low, but inflationary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Things gradually get more expensive with time. And that was by design.
Right.
So anyway, not to hijack your
no,
point.
No, no, no. That's a good point.
So really, but depression, that's pretty significant. Six right. quarters. We really haven't experienced that. Even in 2008, we didn't experience that.
Right. Yeah. But one of the things it was talking about was, you know, obviously a pullback in the stock market. We saw that. We saw about a 20% pullback. And then the second thing it was talking about was a decrease in manufacturing orders, which when I think about that, I think we've seen that already happen, not necessarily by design, though. I think that was more of a supply chain issue. Because people still need things, want things. Like, look at the auto manufacturing plants, right? People are lining up to buy new vehicles, but they can't get them. So we've actually seen a decrease in manufacturer orders because the companies can't deliver on their product. All
right. So are you talking about orders from manufacturers to another manufacturer? Are you talking about the consumer
to the manufacturer? I mean, I guess orders are up, but the amount that's being filled is low.
What I'm seeing is maybe a order fulfillment is down because right. you can't get the product to the end of the goal, you know, across mm-hmm. the finish line. The question is, like real estate, we're seeing some demand destruction because the cost of borrowing has gone up.
Well, we've seen a decrease in the demand for lumber a little bit. That drove the price down.
Sure. The price was so high at some point, right. It's like, no. So, okay. I mean, but how about oil? It's below $100 a barrel right now.
It's true. We have actually seen oil. Oil prices hike. You know, that was one of the main things here. Mm-hmm. But we have seen oil pull back. And what I'm kind of hinting at with a lot of these, this is kind of a peek as to where I'm going with this. We've already seen a lot of these things happen,
mm-hmm.
right? And so if we can go through this list that I've got and say, hey, we've seen that, we've seen this, we've seen that, and you start looking at the chart on what does a economic cycle look like, you have your expansionary phase, and you have a peak, and then you know you have a pullback and a contraction in rate, and then we eventually get to a trough.
Right.
And so I'm wondering, you know, and then coming out of the trough, obviously, back to that expansionary phase, I'm wondering how much of that pullback, that contraction, have we already seen, and are we kind of at that point to where we're seeing the trough?
So what are the signs that you're watching?
So one of those was businesses laying off employees to survive.
Okay, well, that's happening.
Yeah, and we saw that today. Microsoft had, I think they were down 3%, and that was on the news that they were laying off some employees.
Okay.
So Facebook, that happened last week. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen that already. We're seeing it right now.
Yep.
You talked about oil prices, so that was one.
Okay.
We saw the huge spike in oil prices, and since then it's, you know, I think we're under $100 a barrel right now.
I think so too. And commodities in general have come down in price,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, of course, those are a unique market. They move a lot more than the stock market in many cases. So it's a more dynamic, volatile market often.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, we've seen those commodity prices drop.
The next sign was a loss of consumer confidence.
Oh, okay. Well, that's clear. Even
yeah.
people that don't know what they're talking about have... meaning, like, they're not familiar with a lot of stuff. But they know mm-hmm. the markets are broken. They're like, I'm no expert here, but this is not okay.
I mean, have you seen people alter their spending habits? I sure have.
Yes. Well, I've altered my spending habits.
Yeah.
Right?
I've
altered my driving habits.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And it's not extreme, but, you know, we're not taking trips just for the sake of, per se. You know, I'm kind of going, well, when I take a run out to the grocery store or whatever, I'm going to, you know, make sure I get everything on the list.
Yeah. So I definitely think we've seen consumer confidence fall. The other one was rising inflation. So,
yeah.
I mean, that everyone knows that that's happened.
Yeah, well, we've seen it in such real ways. You know, the, mm-hmm. the food and energy inflation has been very, very obvious. The price of, you know, home ownership or rent has also gone up so much recently. So, yeah, that one's pretty obvious.
The one that I would like to kind of pick your brain on is the worsening unemployment rate. So that one's kind of tricky because unemployment was really low for a really long time. Just now, I think we're kind of starting to experience that where, I mean, we just talked about Microsoft and Facebook as examples.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to lay people off. I think that we'll start to see the unemployment rate climb higher.
I would suspect so, and that the Federal Reserve has more or less said that's on their list. You know, they have a dual mandate, right? So the Federal Reserve has two things that it wants to do. It wants to maintain pricing stability,
mm-hmm.
and it wants to maintain full employment. But historically, full employment has been a 5% unemployment rate.
Right.
If you think about it, you know, you look around and you go, yeah, 5 out of 100 people probably don't need that job. And when I say need, it's like, no, they're not qualified. They're just either unwilling to work, or they're unproductive, or they're literally, they have other competency issues that prevent them from being viable in the workplace. So, and again, that's anecdotal. Somebody wants to jump on me for that one. I'm like, whatever. You know, like, that's just picking fights for picking fights' sake. The point is that full employment is not every person has a job.
Right.
That is a utopia that doesn't exist, because there are people that just buck authority. They don't want it.
Yep.
Okay. So the Fed's got this dual mandate, and if we're at an unemployment rate of like 3% right now, then we actually need the job market to cool off just to reach a more stable price point.
Exactly.
Otherwise, it contributes to inflation.
Wage inflation,
so
yes.
So that impacts price stability. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're independent, but, you know, they still kind of hold hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think the Fed's eyeballing that for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're checking a lot of these boxes.
Right.
The next one on there was declining property sales. And
certainly in the housing market. I just mm-hmm. read a crazy stat.
Okay.
Like over 19% of homes under contract in the last month fell through.
I think I need
to go check that.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me.
That was one of those. It stood out in my mind as like outlandish. And if that is really
what
the
do you
case,
think could be the reason for that?
People saying rates just spiked like crazy. I need to bail out of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the numbers don't work anymore.
Right.
And so, you know, I could totally see that. We're seeing time on market extending. We're seeing inventory change. And so there are a lot of signs that the housing market is beginning to roll over.
And a lot of people have been, you know, running to sell their home because they're wanting to capitalize on home prices still being really high. And so I think we've seen a large, you know, push of inventory. And
yeah, I figure a lot of people thought they'd wait until summer
mm-hmm.
because summer is the prime time for selling historically. And the rates did not cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So
correct.
People are like, oh, man, you got to be kidding me. We went from, you know, 3% mortgages to almost 6% mortgages. That's a huge shift. Right. Seismic shift.
So. Yeah. What about credit card defaults? I think you mentioned that like a month ago, even.
It's a biggie that we like to track in terms of the spread between high quality and low quality credit.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really important indicator that research, you know, with some of the groups that I've been in, our research has indicated that when you start to see a widening in the cost of credit, so basically mm-hmm. lousy credit starts to cost more than people with good credit. That's usually a bad economic sign, because that means default rates
right.
are likely increasing. And so the cost of capital is, again, expanding and getting more challenging for people with poor or unavailable credit. So that can be a real negative sign. Yep.
Yeah. So
I've not looked at that in a while to give you a good snapshot of where it's at. But you can kind of see it in just default rates in the junk market or the high yield market. And last I looked, we're starting to see a slight shift in that environment as well. So that is it's checking out of the box.
Right. And those are the 10. So, you know, we went through them pretty quick, but it looks like from everything that I can tell, we're checking these boxes. So we were there.
Right. So I have a super important question after these 10, right? And that is going to be asked after this critical final break.
Okay.
Like, really? That's the cliffhanger? Yeah, you'll
where
see.
Do we go from here, David?
You want to know, like, what's the question? Stick around and I'll tell you, but first this break. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM at 1240 KQE.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Let me just repeat that. for our listening audience, right?
Okay.
The real estate markets cannot be fueled exclusively by people selling homes in California and moving somewhere else.
And if you didn't catch that, you should be on the live stream.
Yeah. We were talking about this over the break, right? So welcome back to the True Wealth Show, Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And we've been going over some of the things that are signs of economic recession or depression. Right? Mm-hmm. And so the list was really fast. So a stock market crash, again, that's inflammatory language, but what are you going to do, right? Decline in manufacturing orders. You've got deflation pressure, oil prices or commodity prices spiking or declining for that matter. It's basically extreme volatility there. Loss of consumer confidence, changes in unemployment, declining property sales, and there's others too, you know, increase in default rates for credit and so forth.
Right.
So all of that with the backdrop is, you know, one of the things that has really driven the housing market in our region of the country, and I know some of you listen in other places in the world, right? You're not just in Oregon. So if you're in another region, this may not be applicable, but here it's common for folks to sell a home at a premium in California and then move up here and purchase a new home and then kind of bank the proceeds as retirement assets.
Yep.
So that's a trend that we see often. It has created some structural problems in our own local real estate market because it's kept the prices really high, and the local job market doesn't really support that because the people that move here aren't, they're participating in the service economy somewhat, but it's not enough to drive major economic activity to sort of move your hermit location to the Pacific Northwest.
Right.
Right. That's so anyway, the issue that I was joking about is how long can somebody keep selling their house for a premium in California when you're seeing people, they have a net export of people now.
Well,
right. So if you see more people leaving California than coming to California, then at some point real estate demand should begin to decline. And so that theory that, you know, somebody can keep, they'll keep paying more for a house in California so that they can then take the proceeds and spend more in other hot markets in the country, that suggests to me that could end.
Mm-hmm.
And the hot markets, you know, I'm not picking on markets when I say this, but, you know, Nashville, Tennessee is a really hot market. Does it stay there? I mean, it's an attractive tax environment, so that helps. Bend, Oregon, can it stay there? Maybe not. Right, you know, that we've seen a shift there.
Or can it continue growing at the same rate?
Well, I mean, it seems like with urban growth boundaries and the availability of places to expand, they're kind of running out of options.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But I will tell you that when rates were 3%, people could buy a lot more of a house in Sun River than with rates at 7.
Yep.
Right. And so that applies to either everybody has to have double the wage they used to because they're going to have double the mortgage, or something's got to give. And I mean, my suspicion is something's got to give. I've kind of said this for a while now. When you print more money in the last year than you did in the previous 200 combined, then at some point you're going to have to pay the bill. Right. And like money printing, win, lose, or draw. You know, we did what we did in the pandemic response. Okay. I'm not making a judgment call, good, bad, or otherwise. I'm just saying the response had a cost, and that bill ultimately comes due, and we're beginning to pay it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if maybe it turns out paying the bill when everybody has got jobs was the right way to do it. You know, when we shut everything down, it wasn't time to pay the bill. We don't have the benefit of going back and trying other ways. We have the way we did. I don't believe the world's coming to an end because of it. I do believe that we're going to have to, the financial system is going to have to process this. And that at some point, this is the, you know, we're going to take our medicine, right? At some point, we're going to pay the bill. That point is now. It's happening.
You're like, I'm feeling the pain.
Just is, right? And mm-hmm. and there's it's pointless to.
But
to
how many
blame
times in history have we
else.
Done something similar, right? Like maybe not to this magnitude, but made some type of colossal yeah. mistake that we have to pay for. I mean,
well,
it's happened so many times.
There are always going to be mistakes, and there's always going to be armchair quarterbacks, right?
Yep.
Monday morning quarterbacks that are going to say, "Well, I would have done it different, this, that, and the other." And some people would have. Some people from the beginning have said they would do it different. Okay,
mm-hmm.
and then their way isn't what happened, and so they're going to be righteous about it. Like, I told you so, I told you so. But the reality is, nobody knew. We ought to take reasonable approximations, or maybe it wasn't reasonable at all, but we did what we did. Here we be.
So what if someone's feeling nervous about this, and they want someone to talk to? What should they do?
Okay, so first, find somebody you trust.
Okay.
If you don't have that somebody, give us a call, right? And we will help you find that somebody, whether it's us or somebody else or whatever it is.
What are some ways they can reach us?
Isn't that usually your job?
Yeah, I'm turning the show around back on you.
He wants to see if I can figure it out. So look, a lot of ways that you can get to our team. And it is a team. So Matt and I are on the team. Justin's on the team. Wes is still around. And we've got, you know, we got a group that puts our heads together for this. You can call us. It's 541-375-0898. Okay. You can email us. Okay. And so that one is info@littlejohnfs.com. You can go to our social media environments. So don't go to my personal page. I'm going to pretend like, you know, like if you try to do that, I'm going to redirect you. But you can go to our Little John FS business page on LinkedIn or on Facebook or whatever, and you can get to us through there.
And what if they missed this?
Well, then they can check the podcast.
Okay.
Or the live stream. Live stream will be posted to YouTube. Subscribe to it. That would help us out and share it with friends. So that, or go to our webpage at www.littlejohnfs.com, and you guys can download it under the Educate tab. But we're out of time for now, Matt. So I guess we got to sign off.
All right.
So until next time, this has been David Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM.
The preceding program was paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brooke Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.